there's been a real, you know, evolution of how one sets about having restaurants in hotels. But it wasn't for me. I then decided I'm leaving Claridge's. As much as I didn't want to, I knew I had to. And then, of course, I had an opportunity. I went for another interview in the Ritz, and it didn't work.
Which year is this? Because I know you started in the Ritz in 2004, so...
This was in 2003.
This is a... Okay, so this is 2000.
A year earlier.
Went back.
And I had an interview, and I remember coming out of the interview, and to cut the long story short, I wasn't feeling that they had the mentality of me. So Mr. Shepherd was waiting to hear what I had to say because he wasn't interviewing me because he was the chairman. And he said to me, okay, then when are we going to start? I said, no, Mr. Shepherd, I'm not coming. And Michel Bourdin, who was then the chef of the Connaught and who was one of the biggest head chefs, was helping the Ritz at the time. And he came to me and he said, John, you're making the biggest mistake of your life. You've wanted to leave, but you're not going to leave. I said, when the time is right, I will leave. So I left it at that. They did come back to me a couple of times and I said, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to. I said, as much as I love the Ritz, I have to do it in a certain way. Anyway, we're not going into detail, but that's the nuts and bolts of it. And I got a telephone call 2 days after the interview. It was from a man called Stephen Boxall. Stephen Boxall and I had worked together in the Barclay. And he telephoned me up. He said, John, he said, how are you? I said, I'm fine, Stephen. He said, you know, I'm going to be the general manager of the Ritz. I said, are you? He said, yeah. He said, the Barclays are training me and let me go and get some development, and then I'm going to become general manager. He said, and that's going to be in a year's time. He says, I want to know if I can contact you to be executive chef of the Ritz. I didn't believe him, but I said, of course, Steve. No problem whatsoever. Get in touch. Because I didn't, he was the restaurant manager. So the jump from restaurant manager to becoming a general manager in that modern day age is one hell of a jump. So I said, okay, thanks very much, and left it at that. And I carried on working. It was a year to the day. I suddenly got a telephone call. I had just been made chairman of the Royal Academy of Culinary Arts.
Yeah.
And it was honestly a week before. And he said, oh, he said, obviously you can't speak. And he had just joined the academy. So I thought we were going to chat about academy. And he says, are you in the kitchen? I said, yes, I'm in the middle of the kitchen now. He says, okay, you can't speak. How about you pop down and see me on Monday? And I said, okay. So I left that, didn't think another thing of it because I thought it was just going to be academy business. I popped down to see him and he says, can you remember the conversation I had last year? And suddenly I clicked. He said, well, I just want you to know I've fired the chef. I said, what? He said, it wasn't working. He said, and I want you to become executive chef. I said, what? Okay. And he says, what will it take? I said, not a lot. I said, what we need to have is an understanding of, you know, value for money for the guest, not overpricing. It was a very, very expensive place to dine. It was a very expensive place to go, the Ritz. But I felt it was out of sync with the value of what people were getting. That was my opinion. And I explained all of this. And I said, I need a certain number of staff to be able to maintain things and to make things good. We need to rejuvenate. We need to modernize. I said, we must keep it as classic. But I've got a vision. I said, I love the Ritz dearly. And I feel at home. I feel I know. I feel that everything I've done will fit into the Ritz. And I'm passionate about making this. And he looked at me. He said, "Don't you think I am?" He said, "So what's it going to be?" I shook his hand and he said, "Okay." He said, "How long is it going to be before you can get here?" I said, "Let me speak to my boss." And then off we come. And it was one of the best things that could have ever happened in my life. I've got a lot to thank Stephen Boxall for. And he was fantastic right the way through. We used to have weekly meetings and he used to say, "I think you need to look at that, John." And I'd say, "I think I need that." He said, "If you do that, I'll get that." And we used to work, you know, it was a bartering thing, but it was a very jolly situation. Yeah. And it was for improving. It was always about improving things. How can we make this happen? How? And it was very simple.
Yeah.
You know, so there was nothing.
Really looking for the right sort of relationship, the right working relationship,
yeah,
with certain people, you know, in an environment where you feel comfortable to implement changes. So I read that you had already taken on board opinions of critics saying that they didn't think that the food had actually matched the grandness of the room at the Ritz. And yes, I know you made a lot of changes in that aspect. Talk to us about those kind of changes that you made.
Well, that is the most amazing, because that is so true. And in actual fact, I can still show you them. There was probably about 2 or 3 years. And I think what was happening was chefs were given a little bit too much freedom and not understanding what the Ritz is, the values of Caesar Ritz, the values of the building. But the restaurant is more powerful than any chef can ever be, our restaurant, because that sets the stage.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the hospitality, it makes the ambience, mm-hmm, and it makes the feeling that the customer receives when they're dining.
Yeah.
And when that's not in sync, people will not feel so good.
Yeah.
And I remember I started on it was in June when I actually started in the Ritz, and same situation as Claridge's. I was very quiet for probably the first 6 weeks or so, basically just trying to understand why they were doing things, what, you know, in what system, etc., etc. And then one day, same thing as I mentioned before, I got very upset. The service was rubbish. I'm talking from the kitchen point of view.
Yeah.
It didn't work. There was things not in sync. There were products coming up that I wasn't happy. So I remember, I can't whistle. I remember trying to whistle like this. Get everybody, and I said, "Right, listen, every single one of you upstairs in the restaurant now." And I took the whole brigade up into the restaurant. It was in between the service, so there isn't anybody in there. And I took people up there and I said, "Look up at the ceiling." Everybody was looking up the ceiling. I said, "What do you see? What do you feel?" And, you know, I got all kinds of comments, but I said, "The most important thing is, do you feel the food you are serving is fit for a room like this?" And of course, a lot of people, there were some of the more seasoned characters were saying, "Yeah, of course, of course." And all of the youngsters, predominantly, the youngsters were the one that really got me. And they said, "No, chef, it doesn't."
Mm.
And I said, "So that's what we've got to change straight away."
Yeah.
And I said, "I want you to feel this and see this so that you can understand what we're trying to achieve." That goes from what we serve food in. One of the things I didn't tell you, that the first thing I did in the Ritz, they had some casserole dishes. They're all made with iron. They're French cooking pots and things, and with brass lids. And I was aghast that they were serving these dishes, certain dishes on them in the Ritz. because it's totally out of sync with what they're doing. And I remember saying to Stephen Boxall, and I said, why on earth are you serving things? And he says, oh, thank God you said that. He says, somebody thinks the same as me. He said, we've just spent £15,000. I said, send it back. He was over the moon.
Wow.
And the whole thing was to actually bring it back to silver, to fine china, and to keep the theme running through. And then, of course, that's translated with the kind of ingredients that one will use. So those were the foundations of what I was doing, but it was all to do with understand. I've read a lot over the years of Cesar Ritz, why he did the thing. And we are actually even doing that now with a refurbishment that's going to go ahead, respecting Cesar Ritz's wishes so that we are still carrying the story on.
Amazing.
Because that's when the Ritz will be at its strength.
Yeah.
In every sense. So for me, it is a very, very important factor because there's nobody bigger than the Ritz. There's nobody bigger than the Ritz restaurant. So we have to bow to that and follow that in every sense of the word.
What's very, very interesting is when you were working at Le Crocodile, you mentioned that, you know, the food was too good for the restaurant.
That was somebody telling me that.
Yeah, somebody told you that. But it's just so interesting that now you're kind of, you know, you're marrying both of those aspects. You know, your food is stunning and now you're in the most stunning venue. And finally, you're in sync with venue and food.
Yeah. And, you know, there were so many things. What you said there, I was very, very particular with the message. I would never say to people, look, I took a word out of the vocabulary of the PR and how we would tell people. Mm. I'd say, I don't want to hear the word tradition.
Mm-hmm.
When you think tradition in modern day values, what do people think in food? They think, oh, it's old, it's not this, it's not that, it's not good food. It's just almost lazy when they use the word tradition. Mm-hmm. So I always use the word classic.
Mm-hmm.
I always say to people, it has to be evolutionary because we have to cook for the modern day diner. And if you're not cooking for them and they're not happy, they'll not come.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to respect the past, but push forward.
Yeah.
And that's the ethos going through all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, Ritz is famously known for the formal wear. Ties for men, for example, are an essential part of day wear within the restaurants. And waiters, they still wear the tail coats and you still wear your 30 centimeter high toque. Is that tradition or is that necessity?
I think that, well, to be perfectly honest, I think that not all of the chefs have always worn hats in the Ritz. I think there was periods when maybe they didn't.
Okay.
This is my take on what I want my chefs and how I want them to operate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has to be clean shaven. I would never allow beards. It's not hygienic.
Right.
I don't like that. I want people to wear hats because I don't want hair in the food.
Yeah, of course.
They're simple things. They're there for a reason.
Yeah.
And that's why I like that. And people know that I'm a disciplinarian as far as what and how we should do things.
Mm.
It's very important.
Of course, Escoffier introduced the toque and you're a disciple of Escoffier.
Oh, yeah.
We have a lot to thank him for, especially the ladies. He was a man ahead of his time and an inspiration in so many different ways. It would be so interesting for us to know the things that really inspired you about Escoffier.
Well, Escoffier, believe it or not, Escoffier was the partner to Cesar Ritz.
Yes.
Absolutely. I like to think that Cesar Ritz was made famous because of Escoffier.
Mm-hmm.
But he had so many dishes and his understanding of what we call the brigade of in the kitchen. He brought the party system. He actually was the first person to use canning in food.
Yes, yeah.
For the army.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a great chef. as well as an organizer. And he would bring product from France that we had never seen. But he, if you see the cooking that is done today, I don't know if maybe you haven't heard this, but a lot of British chefs, they often say now, they say, well, you know, Escoffier has got no relevance today. Let me tell you now, those same people are cooking in some of the styles, but it's Escoffier that brought them. And his foundations of cookery, trust me, are still being used now. Yes, there are some modern techniques, but the understanding and foundation of our cooking today is from Escoffier. It's how you interpret that is really how you cook. Mm-hmm. But everybody is, and we must never forget, and this is what it does really hurt me a little, because British chefs today, they have a lot to thank the French for. The best cooking in Britain today is all influenced by France, even today. And that's my whole thing. And that comes from Escoffier-based recipes. If you read the Escoffier today, the recipes are there. It's how you interpret them. Yeah. What you have to do is evolve them and really make them into a modern day way. And that's the way I cook.
And but how do you do that? How do you modernize your dishes to keep them so relevant, but also classic?
I think there's two methods. I think it's always understanding how you're cooking and how you refine. But we have classic recipes, and I have a lot of young men who are trying to push boundaries. So my job is to say, come on, we'll push the boundaries. However, it has to fit under the roof of Ritz within its style. Mm. So that's the foundation of how we move forward. But it's challenging ourselves and freshening things up. You know, cooking of today is not the same as cooking of 30 years ago, in the sense it's the same recipe. However, there will be a lot lighter in every sense. Mm-hmm. You know, the amount of cream, the amount of butter that we do, it's totally changed. But fundamentally, the recipe is the same. It's just taking less cream, it's taking less butter, and it's how you emulsify the sauce to give the lightness and not have a heart attack.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite important. They're simple processes, plus with modern day machinery, the degree to how you cook and the temperatures with which you cook. But are we still braising? Are we still roasting? Are we still baking? Are we still poaching? You know, I know a lot of chefs say, my poaching is different. Let me tell you, it's not.
And are you still putting, I mean, if you made the changes to the Jersey Royals, is it still the same amount of butter that your mum used to put on them? Those haven't changed.
I had Jersey Royals yesterday with my daughter. I had four fairly large ones because I shouldn't really have eaten them, but on a Saturday and a Sunday now, I'm doing a little bit. And I tell you, I cut them in half. I sprinkled each with a touch of salt on, and then they had a good knob of butter from my, I had the whole butter dish next to me, just put it on. I can't do it any other way.
You just can't, right? There's just no other way to do it. I totally agree. Oh,
that's for sure.
So you touched on earlier about, you know, the type of people that you've been cooking for. You must have had so many famous people in the restaurant at the Ritz. Mm-hmm. We know some can be very eccentric. What's the strangest request that you've probably ever gotten from who?
This is what's going to shock you. I haven't really had any strange requests. And I'm not telling you fibs. I've been asked this question quite a lot. I think I've had a couple of times I've been asked for some strange cereals and things, for some dietary commands. But honestly, I haven't really been asked. I've been asked for ostrich. It's probably the wildest thing that I've been asked for, honestly.
Okay.
It's interesting. I know a lot of chefs have been asked for things, but I think you have to understand the environments that I've been working in. They're very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't have any crazy thing that I've had to cook.
Well, I've actually got a little story for you for a change. So a few years ago, we dined in the little private area behind the curtain in the main restaurant. Yeah. Actually, it was in
the rich room.
Yeah, in 2013. So it's a long time ago now.
You were very, very privileged.
Yes. Well, we were. We were with Jude Law.
Because that didn't happen very often.
Well, we were with Jude Law this evening. Our family, our kids, Jude Law, and it was quite funny because he snuck in without a tie, and he was actually just wearing like a scarf, and he was very proud of getting away without a tie. It was so sweet, because the first thing he said when he came in, we started giggling. He said, "I'm in here and I'm not wearing a tie." So he was quite chuffed that he broke the rules. You would have been cooking for us at that time.
I've been there since 2004, and I've not been drifting away anywhere.
No, I
would have been, but that's exactly. In the Ritz room, it's at that particular time that we didn't do many. Was it dinner?
It was dinner. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, in dinner time, yeah. Lunch, we never really let it out. Okay. That's why I said you were in a very privileged situation, a small party, private party.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Did you enjoy it?
Loved it, yeah.
That's the main thing.
Yeah, the company was great, and Jude Law just kept us entertained all night. So, as I mentioned in my intro, you've been the recipient of numerous awards. Which has been your proudest achievement?
I'm going to say two. I think the MBE was very, very emotional.
Yeah.
And I thought, I had to think very hard. I said, why have I been given this? And it's obviously the work with which I do within the academy, for training development within the industry.
Yeah.
Because the whole philosophy of the academy is to make the next generation better than what we are with training and development. And that was, for me, it was a very, very special thing.
Absolutely.
And I remember, you're not allowed to tell anyone.
Mm.
But I remember the first person that I rang up, because I thought, my mom will understand this. I said, Mom, I'm getting an MBE. And
did she believe you?
Yeah. She said, oh my God. Because, it for me, saying, I've done this in cookery, what is it? But an MBE, everybody understood that.
Absolutely.
So I felt very, very honored in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
And it was very special in that sense. I've had lots of different awards, in recent years that I'd say, it's fantastic and I'm over the moon with them. But the MBE was a very, very special award and one that I cherish.
And was it the Queen or another member of the royal family that awarded you?
In actual fact, it was supposed to be the Queen, but she couldn't come on that day for some reason. And I had the Prince of Wales. And I had met the Prince of Wales before. And I distinctly, one of the things he said, I'm very sorry, John, that the Queen will not be here. I said, well, you've just made my day. It was, amazing. I was very fortunate. I have a few friends that work in Buckingham Palace, and I had a terrible day. Mm. I left 3 hours, and I only live in Hertfordshire. Mm. I left 3 hours before, and the M1 got snarled up. And I was getting late and I was in such a panic.
Oh, wow.
So much so that I arrived at the gates in Buckingham Palace. And they said, "Ah, John Williams." I said, "How do you know that?" "You're the last one in."
That is so funny.
I got there, and as I was queuing, we had to actually catch up with everything. But I was fortunate because with the name Williams, I was right at the end of being awarded. Mm-hmm. And suddenly somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Sir, would you just mind following me?" And I was with my daughter and son, and we were taken to a little private room, and I have a couple of friends there, and they said, "We couldn't allow you to come and get your award without actually giving you a little glass of champagne." So I felt very privileged as well that I got a little special glass of champagne separately in one of the wing rooms.
Oh, how nice.
And, you know, it was just absolutely amazing. Amazing. And that's the one that will always stay very, very close to my heart.
Yeah.
But another award that I can't not mention is the Michelin Award.
Absolutely.
And that one, to me, it is the most important. When I say important as far as culinary status of what you're trying to achieve, I couldn't have done it without the most amazing team. It's the team that do it, but it was the most emotional because I got to know about being invited for this on the Friday, and it was top secret and I couldn't tell anyone, but they allowed me, they said, "Because you've got such a big team, we would like you to bring your sous chef and a couple of guys that work for you." I thought, wow, fantastic. And my cooks were really upset that they hadn't heard anything. They thought, "We deserve one. Why aren't they not looking at us, etc." Anyway, I didn't tell anyone. And then I telephoned work on the Sunday night. It was for the Monday. And I said, "Could you just change the route as of these people?" And I telephoned them and I said, "Tomorrow morning, we're going for a walk." And they said, "What the hell is he? Is he gone off his head?" And I met them at the hotel and I immediately said, "Okay, we're going in a moment, but I've just got to go upstairs and see the GM." I went upstairs. I said, "I just want you to know that I'm taking the boys out. We're going to collect our Michelin star." And I cried straight away. I really did. And we went off there, and the boys started to actually be very suspicious after about 100 yards. And I said, "Where are you taking us, chef? Come on, tell them." I get filled up now when I actually talk about it because it was bloody emotional.
Yeah.
And they said, "Come on, tell us. It's Michelin, isn't it?" And I, once again, I broke down and said, "Yeah, come on, we're going."
Oh.
And I remember being broken up from them because I had to sit in, they had people that were watching the ceremony, and then they asked the chef to go away. And I was taken to a room and they were announcing. And once again, we were very, very late on. And it seemed a little bit somber. You know, everybody was clapping politely and yeah. And then I just heard John Williams and the Ritz. The roof lifted off. I promise you, everybody was cheering, and you know, I just was overcome. And I probably the third time I cried that day, and everybody was really. It was like winning the World Cup.
Absolutely.
Honestly, it was like winning the World Cup, and I thought, right, okay. We had a little celebration. I went back to the hotel. I said, "Listen, guys. You just carry on drinking." I said, "I have to get back to the hotel." It was already quite late. And when I went back, I saw everybody was going crazy. The best, they called it the best Monday ever. And I seen little videos There was no Wi-Fi and things in the kitchen at that time. And the only place that could get Wi-Fi was in the dry stores. And somebody showed me a video of this live link when we were receiving it. And there were six girls. They were all girls, all working in the kitchen. And they got together in the dry store because that's where they had the reception. And somebody videoed them of the live screening of this.
Right.
And they were in tears. Oh. They were hugging each other, but, you know, really joyous.
Yeah.
And I cried again. Because I thought, this is just amazing. Because what it does, it gives you the stamp of approval to say you're on the right line and that you're doing a good job. But it means so much to chefs. A lot of chefs will say, no, it means nothing. But for me, it is the most important. And I just really do believe in them in every sense, because they are quite rigid with what they do and how they do it. Mm-hmm. But there's still ambition in me. You know, we're not finished.
Oh, that's amazing to hear. Great.
You know, I have a team. They are a great bunch of lads, and they've all been trained by me. Mm-hmm. And they will be some of the finest chefs in London, you know, over the next 10 years, 15 years. They will be top men.
Yeah.
And I'm just proud to have them with me at the moment and keep pushing it forward with the best way we can. But I really adore the fact that we have, because it's something that I was really upset that we hadn't.
Mm.
But we're in a great place, and it gives us the confidence to really home in on what we do. That's what it did do. And I feel that we're better for it now. We've been working, as my team says, research and development. That's what they call it now. And they've been working for about 4 weeks with just tweaking little things and making things better.
Mm.
And hopefully for a better experience, the whole service team, we discussed different things of how we can look after the customer better, mm. how the hospitality can be better, mm. and giving, you know. This industry, I use this word a lot, hospitality is what we're about, and that's what we should be giving. Yeah. And so many people don't recognize that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I enjoy.
Yeah. And yeah, do you important. Feel there's been a lot more, has there been any more pressure being put on the team in the kitchen since you received the Michelin star? Because maintaining it is very stressful as well, isn't it?
Do you know, I really believe that every member of the staff will say, you know, they have a responsibility to maintain that.
Mm-hmm.
That's without me saying anything. And they are proud that they've got that.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, what it's done is it's actually taken shackles off them and said, we do this. And all that happens is, I think people tend to relax a little bit and move better. I really do. Mm-hmm. But they all feel a responsibility, but I don't think pressure.
Right.
You know, I think, you know, they are working for a goal.
Yeah.
They are trying their level best. Not that they weren't before, but I think it gives clarity. That rubber stamp gives the clarity. So you say, we know that we're doing this. How can we just make it that touch better?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say.
Yeah. Well, John, you've devoted your life to your career. We all know the time that chefs commit to being in the kitchen. What kind of sacrifices, if any, have you made? I mean, we know that, you know, when you were very young, when you really missed home and then coming back into London, that was a big sacrifice. What other kind of changes have you been through that you found particularly difficult, if any?
Well, the reality, you know, I've spent a lot of time at work.
Yes.
And, you know, with the best will in the world, you know, your family life is, you need balance. And I didn't always have that balance. I wouldn't think of, I just used to say to my wife, I'm going to work, that's it, I'm off. And that was the way it was accepted. Mm. And not really bringing the kids up. I mean, my kids are 31 and 34. And every weekend, they know I'm here. My daughter will always be, she comes around Saturday and Sunday. We walk the dog, as I said, but we always have lunch on Sunday. And my son comes around. He just lives in Radlett, so it's very close to where I live.
Right.
And, you know, he's popping up after our little Zoom here today. Okay. But it's, you know, I often say sometimes I wasn't there and maybe I missed some of the things. But in the last 10 years, we're closer than ever.
Amazing.
So it's, I haven't got a bad story, but I should have devoted a little bit more time. That's the only thing. And with balance.
What is the best advice that you want to give to young chefs of today?
Young chefs of today, I would say to them, first and foremost, really listen. Because people are saying things to you, and when you really listen, you do learn amazing things that can be imprinted on your brain. I certainly on things, everything that I know today are through things that people have told me and taught me, and they're in very different ways. So it's quite important to be able to communicate, digest that, and make it happen. Work with the very, very best people that you can. And you can learn from every single person from all walks of life. The reason that I say that, even in bad circumstances, you learn.
Absolutely.
Because what you learn is not what to do. So there is a learning experience in everything. I think, as I say, go to the very best people to work with. Really, you know, focus on it. But it's not just about a recipe. So many people don't quite get that. They think, I've learned a recipe, I know it. I'm sorry, you don't. Because within a restaurant environment or a hotel environment, that's why every kitchen is different. Mm. Because they have different needs. And the need of that kitchen will determine how you do things also. So it's not just about looking at a recipe and saying, yeah, I can cook that recipe now. It's so much more to learning how to manage. It's learning how to cope with people. It's learning how to actually look after the customer. Mm. And it's beyond, for a chef, it's not about the food that you're putting on the hot plate. It's the feedback that you get at the expense of the customer that has had that food that can tell you whether it was good, bad, or indifferent. And every customer that ever makes a comment, you better believe it. I hate it when chefs say, no, no, that wasn't like that. I do it like this and it's not. It's total rubbish. It's because the customer has experienced something. So you have to listen to that to make the improvement that you want. It may be just a temperature thing. It may be just somebody doing something in the wrong way. It could be so many things, but listen to it because that's when you will improve. Mm. So I think that for me is probably the most important, and really work hard. You know, don't mumble up. There's so many people saying, well, I'm working too hard, so I'm not going to do that. Work for yourself. The energy that you put into that is for you, and it's got to be for your benefit. And as long as it gets you benefit, keep at it. You know, so many people will say, why should I give that? Well, if you don't give it, you're not going to move forward.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of listening, so earlier on you said that you really wanted to share a story. I think it was Lady Thatcher. Do you want to tell us about that?
I think we'll start off. Lady Thatcher finished her life in the Ritz.
Yeah.
She lived there when she died. Mm. And we have to go back a lot of years. And I can't remember the exact date. But I was chef of Clarges. And basically one afternoon, Lady Elizabeth Anson, who was the party planner at the time, and she came into the Ritz restaurant in the Royal Box in between lunch and dinner for a tasting. I was told it was a VIP and you have to go and see them. And it was Lady Thatcher. And she was sitting there with Dennis. I had just arrived back in Clarges, so it would have been 94, 95, the very latest. It was her 70th birthday. And she was sitting there in the Royal Box, and I had to propose some menus to her. So I sat down, and I was quite taken aback. She was still at the height of her powers, a very, very special lady. And I thought, wow, I'm going to be doing the function. And she sat me down. Not only that, the Queen was coming and all kinds of dignitaries, but the Queen was coming. So it also showed the way the Queen felt about Lady Thatcher, because it was a private occasion. Mm-hmm. And she sat me down. I sat down, and she looked at me, and I think she said, "Oh, this young man's, well, I wasn't so young, but I was much younger than today." She said, "This young man must be quite nervous." That's what I felt. And straight away, she said, "Now, chef," she said, "before you tell me what you're going to serve me, I just want to tell you a little bit about me." I said, "Oh, yes." So I sat there listening. She said, "You know, I'm very, very easygoing where food is concerned. I eat anything." She said, "Let me tell you a typical day." She says, "In the morning," she says, "I get up, I don't eat any breakfast, I just have coffee." She said, "Sometimes I might have a biscuit with a cup of tea at 10:30. Lunch, I eat whatever is on the table." She said, "If I'm at a function, I eat whatever's on the menu, but I never make a fuss. I eat anything." Lovely. She said, "In the afternoon, I might have a piece of cake and a cup of tea." She said, "But dinner, if we have a function, if I've got a function to go to, I eat whatever's on the menu. But if not, I always like to have dinner with Dennis. And that's usually fairly late on at about 10 o'clock. Isn't that right, Dennis?" And he said, "Yes, that's right, my dear." And I thought, "Oh, wow, this is fairly cool." And she says, "And do you know what that is, chef?" I said, "I'm sorry, I really don't." She says, "Anything that I can get from Marks and Spencer's, and I can pop it in that machine," and it goes, bing, it's ready. "Now, chef, you're in charge. What are you going to cook for me?" So I built this menu.
You didn't go off to Marks and Spencer's then?
No, but it totally relaxed me in every sense. I thought, wow, she was looking at me, and I promise you, she was at her best. She had a way of looking at you and saying, "I'm interested in you. I want to hear what you've got to say. And I'm listening. I'm waiting for you." And it sort of chilled me. Mm. And I thought, wow, what a woman.
So what did you create for her?
Well, actually, I'm going to not tell you that just yet, because we have to go forward now. But I did create a very nice menu for her. And basically, we have to move on now. And it was probably 6 months before she passed. Now, she, first of all, for years, Lady Thatcher used to have a table in the Ritz every fortnight where she'd have lunch. But then she came and stayed with us for the last 6 months of her life, etc. And it was very early on. I'm going to say, let's say 6 months before she passed. And this particular day, I had a table of four people. Do you know Peter Allis, the BBC golf commentator? He passed away just this year.
Yeah.
Peter was a friend of mine. I used to go to some charity events, and he used to start, and he always would say, "And here we've got B Big John from the Ritz on the tee, ready to play his golf, and whoosh, off he's gone. Anyway, Peter was a good friend, and he used to have a program called Around with Alice, and he used to have a chat, just knocking the balls and interviewing people. And we came up with an idea, or Peter did, where it was a lunch with Alice. So he brought the people I bid for this charity table. There was a table of four, and they came and had lunch. I prepared the menu. Peter gave them lots of stories because he was a great raconteur and chat. Amazing. And I went to see them. So I'm standing there with Peter, and I really did adore him. He was a great man, great man. And he sat there, and he said, "We've had a lovely lunch, John." And he used to speak like some really, really lovely lunch, man. And I said, "Good." And he says, "By the way, have you seen who's over there? On table, what's that table?" I said, "That's table one." He said, "Have you seen who's on table one?" I said, "Yes, Peter, I've seen who's on table one." He said, "Do you ever go and see her?" I said, "To be honest, no, not now, because she's having private business and things, I tend not to go to the table." He said, "You what?" I said, "No." He said, "You should." I said, "No, Peter." I told him the story about doing her 70th birthday. He said, "You're off your head." He says, "If you don't go there now, I'm going to drag you over there myself." I said, "No, Peter, you don't got this." And he got up. I said, "No, okay, I'm going to go." And I went across. Now, you have to remember, at this particular time, she was actually, they said she was losing some of her mind, and, you know, dementia, et cetera, were kicking in. Although I don't know all of the medical thing, but that was the story. And I went to the table and I said, "Lady Thatcher," I said, "excuse me for just popping to see you." I said, "but I just wanted to come and say good afternoon. I hope you've enjoyed your lunch today. And I know that you'll not remember me, but I cooked for your 70th birthday at Claridge's." She said, "My dear boy, you should have, of course you should have come up. And do you know what? I can remember exactly what we had for dinner. We had Dover sole with some morels inside there. We had a poached breast of chicken. And we had this amazing apple and bramble parfait. How could I ever forget?" Well, I just went, wow. The woman that was supposed to not remember anything. Well, I run downstairs, and there's 12 steps going from the restaurant to the kitchen. I did it in three. Kitchen, and I was floating. I said, "Do you imagine Lady Thatcher remembers what I cooked for her for her 70th birthday?"
Amazing.
And that, for me, was one of the proudest moments of my life.
How wonderful. Oh, my gosh. Really standout dishes. Yeah. I feel like I need to come in and have these dishes now.
Well, that's true. It was really special. And little things like that, I don't know, they mean so much to me. Yeah. And I think that's what young people should strive for. You know, it's not about working. It's about giving people some memory. And when they give you that feedback of memory, that's what it does to you. Mm. I get quite emotional with things like that. And honestly, I've told this story 100 times because I'm so proud that I had the opportunity. And I was actually invited to the funeral. You know, it's, and they're special people. Mm. Special people do make me feel something. They give me a warm glow. And that's why I say, you know, there are people that really make me emotional, but they're, you know, the pop star world or the pop culture and the Hollywood, you know, actors or anything, it doesn't really mean anything to me. But I feel certainly Lady Thatcher is somebody that I really looked up to. I think she did amazing things. And as I said, the royal family, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. And, you know, when you think, for me, the royal family is the, it's the best thing. I'm not going to say it's the only thing, but we don't have a lot of things in Great Britain now. But the one thing we have is the royal family. And everybody should remember that, because what they bring to this country, I'm telling you, it would be nothing without them. That's my humble opinion.
Yeah, I'm on your page. And does the Queen have a favorite dish?
What I would say to you is, once again, conservative food. I think they know what they like and they keep to tradition and seasonality, mm-hmm. and quite classic.
Okay.
That's the best I would actually describe in my, you know, it's not that I've cooked for her every day. I think there's always a framework to work within on a menu. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, be classic and straightforward is the best way. Mm. I think nobody wants surprises.
And what about you? What are your favorite dishes? Where do you, in normal times, of course, where is your favorite restaurant? Where do you like to dine? Or who's your favorite chef?
You know, in Britain, I think, you know, you've got several great restaurants. I think for me, certainly Heston. I love the Fat Duck, the Waterside Inn. I love certainly Claire Smith at Core. Mm-hmm. I had a great meal there last year. One of the few times I went out, and it was really memorable. Claude Bozzi, you know, they're proper cooking establishments, and they understand the culture,
yeah,
in every sense. You know, I know I'm not giving anybody new inspirational places, but they're there because they're good. That's the reality. They're very, very special places.
I think you've just listed all of my favorite restaurants, and how phenomenal is it that, you know, women are really making waves in the industry. Claire Smith, she's got 3 Michelin stars. Core is a fantastic restaurant.
What I would say, people, I hope people understand the achievement that Claire has done. Mm. I admire her from the bottom of my heart. I tell you, she has done an amazing job, and she is from strength to strength. It is fantastic for this country also. Mm. And I'm in awe. That's the truth. Amazing.
John, we have been together for, is that 3 hours? No, it couldn't have been 3 hours, could it? Is it?
Wow.
I still have one last question for you. Tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
Oh, I'm an open book.
I know that.
I'm trying to think. Okay, I don't know if you know this, so I'm going to say it. Well, I'm single, but hoping not to keep that status very long. I'm with a friend at the moment, but...
How lovely. That's really lovely. Yeah.
My daughter is my biggest critic.
Yeah, they always are, yeah.
My daughter, when... I will measure food. My daughter, when she eats, when she says this is good, it's special. And she's not a person that's saying it for any reason. She'll be eating, and we were having a chat yesterday, and we had some new season lamb. And she said, wow, Dad, this lamb is really beautiful. I said, well, it's new season lamb. And it's this, and I got it from James Martin, in actual fact. I just did a show for him, and he gave me a China and he says, yeah, take that home. And it was absolutely first class. But what I was impressed with, how she was able to pick up, without me saying anything, She said, yeah, but this is very, very special. Nobody knows that I've lost 5 inches, well, it's 6 inches off my waist.
Well, congratulations. That's really, that is really, really good. It's great.
Time Nobody for... knows that. I haven't told anybody that. and I've got to get new chef's uniform, etc. What else is there? Some secret. Well, I'm going to tell you something that mightn't be totally true. I'm not really a Geordie.
You're not really a Geordie. Okay.
No, Geordies don't. Real Geordies come from Newcastle, and I'm what they call a sand dancer. But people will know that. I just thought I'd throw that in. It was something that might make people laugh.
No, that's great. That's a great one. John, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. We've had 3 hours together. It's been literally like lunch and dinner. So thank you so much for your time. It's been such a pleasure. And guys, if you enjoyed today's interview, please subscribe, rate, and drop me a quick review. It's super helpful so other people can find me. And if you want to keep up to date with what John is up to, you can find him on Instagram at John William Chef, and I'm at Posh Nosh Gal.
Shalina, all I can say is it has been pure joy. And if it's lunch and dinner, there's nobody better to have an interview with. Thank you very, very much indeed. I've really thoroughly enjoyed it. I think you know that.
Ditto. So did I. It's been such a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you so much, John.